October 21st. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. Thanks for joining me today, whether you are listening on KHFX 1140 AM in the Dallas-Fort Worth area or via the Internet. I am located in the Chicago suburbs, while RBN's headquarters are at 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Sunday marks my one-year anniversary here at RBN, and it's been a wonderful year. You may see my guest schedule and their associated websites at spingola.com. Click on the radio schedule button and choose the appropriate month. Subscribe to the archives for only $1.33 per month to listen to previous RBN programs. Just go to republicbroadcasting.org. Visit RBN's Facebook page at facebook.com/republicbroadcasting. Share it with your friends and others. When you visit the RBN Facebook page, be sure to press the like button at the top. Also, be sure to sign up for the raffles here at the RBN Facebook page. And again, that is facebook.com/republicbroadcasting. I had a bit of an emergency yesterday, and therefore we had a rerun of an earlier program from July. I have scheduled Veronica Clark for November 2nd. Glad that we could do that. Secretary of State Clinton recently called for the capture or killing of Muammar Gaddafi. One day later, NATO forces in Libya for 7 months attacked Gaddafi's convoy as it was leaving Sirte. NATO, a Judaic construct, said that its commanders were unaware that Gaddafi was in the convoy. However, sources say that the killing had all of the characteristics of a coordinated assassination, synchronized between NATO aircraft and forces on the ground. NATO aircraft attacked the convoy when Gaddafi was attempting to leave Sirte. The National Transitional Council has announced that the war will soon be over, and NATO's Secretary General says the end of the campaign has now moved much closer. He said that the success of this mission demonstrated that the alliance continues to play, and I quote, an indispensable role in confronting current and future security challenges. NATO warplanes have flown about 26,000 sorties, including over 9,600 strike missions. They destroyed Libya's air defenses and over 1,000 tanks, vehicles, and guns, as well as Gaddafi's command network. Next step, the bankers will come in and take control of the country. We will take calls in the second hour when we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. My guest today is Carl Radl. That's R-A-D-L. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. Carl, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Deanna.
Well, I'm really glad that you could take time out of your schedule. And we decided that today you were going to talk about communism and the Jews. And that is quite a history that a lot of people are not aware of. And you also have a book coming out about that, do you?
Yes, Communism and the Jews, a Source Reader. It's not a normal book in the sense of the term, is that people can't actually buy it because it contains an awful lot of copyright material from the last 10, 20 years worth of academic scholarship. So myself and my publishers decided the best way to go forward with that is to have it as a sort of a freebie. So you kind of you get it free if you pay the postage charge.
All righty. We do have to cut to a three-minute break. We will be right back with our guest today, Carl Radl, after a word from our sponsor. Stay tuned.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Have you heard? Proactive is better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway. Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactive, your acne can heal, and you can prevent new breakouts from happening. Be one of the first to try it by giving us a call at 1-800-489-0192. Because we're going to let a million people try Proactive risk-free and also receive our legendary refining mask and green tea moisturizer free if you call right now. You heard it. Be one of the first to try Better Than Ever Proactive Solution. You'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial, plus a free refining mask and green tea moisturizer. Call 1-800-489-0192. This is our best radio offer. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactive, plus two free extras. Go to GetProactive.com or call 1-800-489-0192. That's 1-800-489-0192.
What really gets in the way of your goals and dreams? Time? Money? Education? Well, if it's all of the above, Ashworth College is for you. Ashworth can help you achieve your goals by letting you study at your own pace, online, anywhere, anytime. Your computer is your classroom. With programs as low as $39 a month, Ashworth College is one of the most affordable online schools out there. Just $39 a month. Plus, Ashworth offers over 100 nationally accredited college programs, such as criminal justice, healthcare, technology, and business. You could earn as much as $300,000 more than those without an associate's degree. No high school diploma? Well, Ashworth even offers high school completion programs. So call an Ashworth Career Advisor right now, toll free at 1-866-504-8173. That's 1-866-504-8173, or go to ashworthtraining.com.
Welcome back. Our guest today is Carl Rattle. Am I saying your name right?
Yes, Rattle is correct. It's actually a pseudonym, as you probably guessed from my accent. unfortunately, because I am an academic, I have to use a pseudonym, because otherwise I will not get a tenure with my views.
Certainly. All righty. You need to tell us where we can get your book, Communism and the Jews, after it is published, or after it is ready to acquire.
It's being published by Historical Review Press. That's a publisher in Britain. You can get it at their website, which if you just search on Google, Historical Review Press, you'll find it. I think it's wety.com, HRP these days, but I think it might also be whrp.com. They've literally just changed their website, so I'm afraid I'll have to, pass on the exact one. But if anyone wants to get hold of a copy, all they have to do is email me at, submitted.controversies@gmail.com. And I'm more than happy to send them a copy come December when it's published.
All righty. There seems to be an echo.
Oh, sorry, is there? 1 second. Is that better?
Yes. It was just when I was talking. So.
Oh, gosh. Okay. It's just my lap. It's just my netbook playing up.
Okay.
Well. To start, I suppose I should kind of say that I have a MSc in anthropology and a PhD in modern history, and my speciality is, well, Marxism. One of the interesting things about communism as a ideology is, first of all, it came from Karl Marx, who we all know was Jewish, although one author has recently claimed he wasn't because he didn't follow Judaism. Logic escapes me.
Yeah, a lot of them don't. So what? What's the big deal here? I mean...
Well, okay, well, first thing you need to understand about Judaism is it just doesn't actually operate on the same axis as, say, Christianity or Islam. Those two are religions work on universalist principles. So they say you can, if you merely believe, you can be a, you can be part of our community. In Judaism, it doesn't quite work that way. You have what is called Israel and non-Israel. These are biologically defined elements. So you can be a believer in Judaism, you can be a convert to Judaism and be non-Israel, which will put you below in Judaism someone who is not a believer, but is of Israel. So somebody who is born Jewish, okay, has a Jewish mother or has a Jewish father who is a member of what we call the Kohanim or the Levite, the two priestly tribes, then they are classified as Jewish regardless of any religious thought that they have. So they can be a Christian, they can be an atheist, it doesn't matter. They are still Jewish, fundamentally, according to Judaism, which is why you find Jews often talking in terms of Israel and converts, apostates, and so forth, in a sort of unusual way. They tend to sort of fool people like that because they use what... They have three definitions of Jewishness. You have culture, religion, and you have biology. And a common trick both in academic circles and popular circles in debate is to define yourself by one of these and then use another one in your logic. So you sort of it's a con man three card trick, if you like.
Yes, they're good at that.
Very good at it. They are very, very good at it. And they've done it in literature on communism very, very successfully. A recent author published by Cambridge University Press, pointed out that the three major authors we have on communism and the Jews, particularly Lev Dich, Elias Zelikova, and Leonard Shapiro, all of whom were Jewish, and all of whom absolutely minimized Jewish involvement in Marxism and Russian populism, which is this precursor. And Elik Harbel, who is the man who wrote that, said very, very simply, "My findings indicate that Jews flocked as much to the revolutionary standard of populism as that of Marxism later on. And they did so for the same motives, which were rooted in their Jewish upbringing and Jewish cosmopolitan desire to better the world." Or in Judaism, that's called Shema.
Okay.
It's been sort of minimized because there's an awful lot of lists going on in the literature about, X was a Jew, Y was a Jew, sort of Z wasn't, and so forth. Many of these lists that are often put forward by very well-meaning people are actually wrong, unfortunately, and they give very easy ammunition to opponents of this view, because they say immediately, "Oh, this list's wrong. I've got a list of non-Jewish communists," which often, for some reason, includes people like Kim Il-sung and Mao. No, I don't think anyone's ever charged the Chinese Revolution as being Jewish-led, but apparently they seem to think so. A good example is a list that circulates. It's what we call the Commissar lists. They come from a man named Robert Wilton in 1922, when he wrote a book called The Last Days of the Romanovs, in which he asserted, among other things, that the Bolshevik Revolution was almost entirely Jewish in origin, and gave a list of commissars he said were Jewish or were in the said position. Myself and others have worked through that list several times, and we have come up with most of it's wrong, or the positions didn't exist, or the person was in there for a month or something and had been listed as being there for 3 years when it was published in 1922, etc.
Mm-hmm.
A big thing in terms of trying to understand the connection between the two is if you just have a look at some of the academic literature, it will tell you an awful lot more than if you read, Denis Farhay's The Rulers of Russia, which is a classic text on the subject for those who oppose the Jewish angle on this particular point. A good example, again, is Havelaar, There are other examples, even Jewish examples, like Joshua Rubinstein's Stalin's Willing Executioners, which listed as a history of the Jewish Anti-Fascist Committee in World War II that was heavily involved in setting up the whole Holocaustian nuttery that we see today. Talks extensively about some of the, you know, how heavily Jewish a lot of the institutions of the USSR were, which has led credence to some of the claims made about Stalin, most recently by Vladimir Naumov, who's a Russian historian of the purges, who has argued that the Stalin's purges of 1949 to 1953, the supposed pogrom that so talked about, is was an anti-Jewish pogrom, but others have recently begun to question this and say, no, this is wrong, because it targeted other people as well. And again, we have some history with that with Jewish authors. A good example is what we call the Chmielnicki pogrom of 1679 in Russia, which Jews have traditionally asserted was a anti-Jewish action alone. But in 1966, a Jew named Greenberg, in a book, in an academic book, pointed out quite revolutionarily that this was wrong and that it didn't actually target Jews at all. Jews just happened to be in places of power at the time, and, you know, and draw from that what you may. In terms of Bolshevism itself, we have an awful lot of Jewish authors, attached to it, both internationally and locally. That cannot be denied as far as I'm concerned. The literature brooks no denial, essentially, although you will find some people who probably will. A good example, which I'll get onto in the second segment here, is the issues around Karl Marx and his relationship with communism, just to give someone a taste a bit. Karl Marx is not the man that we are often told he was by popular history programs, etc. Basically, he cheated on his wife repeatedly. With a servant that he had, it's often touted that he was a proletarian. Actually, he lived as what they call a bourgeois, someone who lived in luxury, middle class, and he did so on Friedrich Engels' charity. So Friedrich Engels sent him thousands and thousands of pounds, which would equate to about hundreds of thousands of dollars today, to live a life in which he drank himself half to death, and he wrote very little.
Now, didn't a couple of his children commit suicide?
Oh, that was his daughter, Eleanor Marx. In many ways, she echoed her mother, Jenny von Westphalen, who, after about 2-3 years married to Marx, seemed to have wanted to get out of the relationship, but couldn't because of the fact that none of her family would help her and her pride wouldn't allow it, essentially. Eleanor Marx was an interesting character in herself because her husband was Aveling, who was the first English translator of Das Kapital, along with Samuel Moore, who was a chemist and friend of Marx. Interestingly, I don't know if you know this, but did you know that Karl Marx didn't write most of Das Kapital?
No, I didn't. I know that he stole a lot of ideas from Clinton Roosevelt.
Yes, that's right. But he didn't write most of Das Kapital. Most of Das Kapital, Volume 1, is the only volume that Karl Marx supposedly wrote. The literature has discussed this for some years, since the 1970s. But the conclusion has been generally that, or has turned so in recent years, and a good biography, if anyone wants to look into it, is Tristram Hunt's recent Marx's Journal, which is a biography. But I'll end it there now.
All righty, we do have to cut to a 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsor, so stay tuned.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Extend your life with
Extendovite. Are you or someone you know suffering from high blood pressure, cholesterol, or chest pains? Are you looking for a more natural way to overcome these health challenges? Extendovite is made from herbs known to help with these symptoms. Made from garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, and four other herbs, Extendovite goes to work detoxifying heavy metals and killing fungus and virus to enhance your overall health. For only $69.95 plus shipping and handling for a two-month supply of either capsules or liquid, you too can begin on your path to better health. For more information, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous-based metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, and metal expansion and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate on itself, as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphite. It also offers the tremendous benefit of being non-toxic. It is used for a friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
Welcome back. Our guest today is Carl Radl, that's R-A-D-L, and his website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. And we were talking about Karl Marx and what he actually didn't do as far as Das Kapital.
Oh, yes, Das Kapital, as I said, it's only the first volume that's supposedly written by Karl Marx. Whether he wrote it, he probably wrote most of it, but the editing was certainly done by Friedrich Engels. We know that much about it, because a lot of works, like, for example, the Communist Manifesto, are primarily Engels' work, not Marx's. The only work of the Das Kapital, which is four volumes, people don't usually know there's actually four volumes of it, of which one is the first, published in 1868, I think, was was Karl Marx's supposed magnum opus, the first volume of his great ideology, supposedly. The second and third volumes were written and published by Friedrich Engels after Karl Marx's death, supposedly from notes by Marx, and that has and number four was a further publication by Karl Kautsky, a great German socialist thinker, wasn't Jewish before anyone says he was. All he did was to take Marx's notes on several 19th century political economists like John Stuart Mill, and put them in a book. That's all he did. But as far as the literature is concerned, volumes 1 to 3 are pretty much the work of Engels. And I will also note here, again, your listeners and yourself might not be aware that the most cited work in any Marx's book, and you're quite free to look up Lenin or Trotsky or anyone like that, you'll find that the most cited author is Engels. It is not Marx. They don't cite Das Kapital. They tend to cite anti-dueling, as we call it, or Herr Düring's revolution in utopia and science. This has been used to argue by a Jew named Norman Levine in 1973, I think it was, that there is two distinct what we call authorial voices. There was Engels, then there was Marx, and he tried to separate out the two. And the general point about this has been that people have said we can't do this, because there is no sure way that we can say for sure this Marx actually wrote any of this, and that Engels seems to have written a lot of it anyway, or at least, well, he certainly wrote, for example, the New York Tribune articles, which was, the New York Tribune, just for people again aware, was a best-selling pro-union newspaper, far-left associated, in the 1840s and 50s and 60s in New York.
Right. And he did, well, actually, Marx didn't speak English or write English, and so Engels did most of that work, but it was done under Marx's name, right?
Yes. He did speak English, actually. He didn't speak it very well. I think it's come across as one of these things has come down to history that he didn't speak English very well. He did write in English, but he wrote, the way he tended to write was he would mix English, French, and German, and even some Latin together.
So, oh dear.
There's a whole collection of what we call the mega archive of all Marx's writings and Engels's writings that's been going on since the 1970s. It's a massive project that's been going on for such a long time. We still have very little idea as to who exactly wrote what in a lot of cases. But, it's just one of these historical things where people tend to assume that Karl Marx wrote all this material. He didn't.
No, he's too busy with this maid and living a lavish lifestyle, right?
Yes, pretty much. Another thing that you might not be aware of, I don't know what you've read about Karl Marx or not read about Karl Marx, is a great example is his habit when it came to sourcing things. Because people took Marx very, very seriously up till about the 1970s as a social historian, as they did with Engels. And when a historian called William Henderson, a great biographer of Engels again, decided to look into all their sourcing. And he wrote in his two-volume biography of Engels, which is the academic standard still today, that essentially, Marx and Engels took quotes out of context. So what they did, what they would do is they would take those so-called blue books that the British government would produce about the conditions of workers, conditions of the housing, conditions of this, that, and the other. And they would take a sentence from the top, or take a sentence from the bottom, and join them together as if they were just one quote. And so obviously, the effect was very different from the actuality. But probably the thing to point out again is that Marx himself was a massive hypocrite. He scorned an awful lot of people in his lifetime. He scorned Bakunin, who called him a filthy Rothschild-inspired Jew. Bakunin being the founder of anarchism.
Yeah.
And again, I'll go into that a bit more after the break, I think.
All righty. We will be right back with our guest today, Carl Rattle, after a word from our sponsor. Stay tuned.
Listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Berkey purification systems have long been recognized as the world's ultimate in water purification. Berkeys are used worldwide under normal, hostile, and emergency environments. Securing your access to good-tasting, sparkling, wholesome drinking water can be harder than you might expect. Water is often laced with chlorine, lead, high levels of harmful bacteria, and other unwanted chemicals and contaminants. Even bottled water can contain these contaminants, and moreover, it's expensive. Other purification systems are inferior. Most do remove pathogenic bacteria, and many remove the beneficial minerals that your body needs. Perhaps that's why Berkey systems have long been recognized as the world's ultimate in water purification. This simple, highly effective method of microporous, self-sterilizing, and recleanable black Berkey purification elements bring you the finest water purification system available anywhere. Call today, 1-800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719. Or go to our online store, republicbroadcasting.org. Free shipping for a limited time only.
Are you still paying your credit cards and so-called bank loans thinking that you owe the money? Do you feel like it's your moral obligation but can't see an end in sight? Well, what if I told you that in truth, you don't owe a single penny and that the banks know this and hope you don't find out? Here's where we come in. Free2Prosper.com specializes in a profound debt repudiation method which challenges the validity of your so-called debts, morally frees you from the burdens, and protects your property. Our system is often superior to settlement, bankruptcy, or consolidation, which often leave you in a worse situation. If you feel the moral obligation to take care of yourself and your family, then I urge you to consider taking action right now. The economy will not wait. If you want to know more so you can prosper through the economic collapse, all while staying honorable and true to yourself, then call 877-417-8393. That's 877-417-8393. Or visit free2prosper.com right now.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with the return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, the government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper. Well, that's a contract. A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offeror can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experience process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
Welcome back. Our guest today is Carl Rattle. And you had talked about the Tribune, the New York Tribune, which was owned by Horace Greeley, and how Ingalls actually wrote some of the work that was attributed to Marx. And so go on. I know that you started on another topic, but please continue.
Sorry. Sorry, I was. Anyway, he wrote all of it. There is very little debate now that Marx wrote very, very little for Greeley, as you say. He wrote all the military articles, all the articles about the South, the North, and he covered the American Civil War for the Tribune and so forth. Again, it's just one of these things that people aren't aware of and hasn't really filtered into the popular literature on the subject. Another classic thing that, and I'm going to sort of leave Marx here a little bit because I'm conscious of the time, was that we have the Communist Party of the United States of America. Not a lot of people know very much about CPUSA. It was one of the great, it was regarded as one of the great parties outside of the United, outside of Russia by the Comintern. The only party that would be akin to it in terms of influence within the Comintern was the German Communist Party, the KPD, the Communist Partei Deutschland. We have a lot of interesting things about it in regards to Jews and their influence in it. but it's really not known outside of specialists in the subject. A great example is its leader in the Second World War and the 1930s was Earl Browder, who took over from Jay Lovestone, who was a Jew, who was Jewish and later became a CIA operative, in 1927. The reason for the changeover from Jay Lovestone, Benjamin Gitlow, a lot of a very, very Jewish leadership, to such an extent where you, basically about half of the secret USA leaders from 1919 to 1927 were Jewish in some respect or another. But in 1927, Jay Lovestone, with the advent of the Stalin versus Bukharin in the USSR, he chose Bukharin. He printed a headline in the Daily Worker saying, claiming that Bukharin had won. And of course, Stalin won. And Stalin immediately, got rid of Lovestone, who then set up his own little party, had a fight, with Benjamin Gitlow. Benjamin Gitlow then became an anti-communist and Jay Lovestone then followed in 1936. Although we have, according to recent documents found in the, Comintern and the GPU archive, archives in Moscow, found that Lovestone was cooperating against America, with, Soviet espionage, the Soviet espionage apparatus until 1936. Where he realized he wasn't going to get back into the party and certainly not in a leadership position. So he then went over to help the FBI, help the anti-communist, and became a great anti-communist figure, in quotes.
That's interesting.
The reason I brought up Earl Browder, who wasn't Jewish, he was an accountant, basically, who Stalin chose because he was a fairly simple-minded, would be the only way to describe him nicely, I think, is that his wife, we were unaware of until 1994, was a Jewess called Reza Browder. She had been born in Russia, in the USSR, and she was a Bolshevik flying court judge in the Latvia, Lithuania, that sort of area, and she was responsible for thousands of deaths. And then was regarded by Stalin as a such a good judge that she became a member of the higher level of the Soviet judiciary under him, and before she came to the United States. Another thing, again, going back to this, to the Jewish theme, is the figure of Armand Hammer, spelled A R M. Yeah, I'm sure you know of him. He was Jewish, and his father Julius Hammer. Now, It's been a long debate with the pro-communist part of the historical community, arguing that he wasn't in any way pro-communist. He was deluded. He was a liberal. You name it, they've argued it. We now know for a fact that Armand Hammer was responsible for funding this Communist Party of the United States of America from the Comintern, and that he knowingly did so. Because we have telegrams, we have literally photocopies of telegrams between Communist Party USA officials, the effect of Hammer has got us this much money, we go get it from him, you have to meet him here, here, or there.
And you say he was Jewish?
Oh, he was Jewish, yes. Armand Hammer was Jewish beyond any doubt, as was his father, Julius Hammer, who also helped the Communist Party. Another famous figure in the Communist Party USA that no one seems to have heard of is Jacob Satchel, who is mentioned by Whitaker Chambers in his great autobiography Witness, where he recounts his role as an espionage agent. I should note in passing that Chambers' wife, Esther Schmitz, was Jewish. Another one, as they say. Satchel was a major figure in the underground of the Communist Party. So to explain briefly, a Communist Party in terms of Marxism-Leninism in this period, what we call Popular Front epoch, had two sides to it. It had the open party, and the underground party. Jacob Satchel was a major figure in the open party, but he was also the leader and the contact for the underground party. So he would be a key figure. If a Soviet revolution had come to America, he would have been leading the death squads, pretty much, along with a figure known as Joseph Peters, a.k.a. Israel Borstein, who came from Hungary and he participated in the revolution of Bela Kun, who was himself Jewish, and famously decreed in his early days that all toilets on Sunday would become public toilets. So you can imagine people didn't like him very much.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, we
and
have...
Wasn't his name C-O-H-N initially? Or...
C-O-H-N. Oh, it's sorry, yes. Bela Kun. Yes, yeah. Kun is a contraction of Cohen. Yes, you're right. It's just a German one. So you have C-H, you have C-H-N, C-U-N, and C-U-H-N, and C-O-H-N, C-O-H-E-N. They're all the same thing. It basically means you are a member of the paternal tribe of Israel, and you are biologically entitled to be a priest at the next temple when it supposedly arises in Jerusalem.
Oh, very interesting. Okay.
That's a very brief one.
Now, the Communist Party in the United States, it started in when,
1919? It went through several different variations in its first few years. The Communist Labour Party in 1919, the Communist Party of America in 1920, the Unified Communist Party in 1921, the Workers' Party of America in 1923, and it became the Workers' Communist Party in 1925, 1926, and then became the Communist Party of the United States of America in about 1927 when Lovestone was removed. In these early iterations, you have huge amounts of Jews involved. You have good examples are Martin Abern, Philip Ellenberg, again Jacob Satchel, J. Lovestone, William Weinstone, Ludwig Law, John Pepper, who was again an associate of Bela Kun, who was involved in mass murder. No surprise there, I'm sure. You've got Moshe Olgin, you've got Rose Pastor Stokes, Alexander Trachtenberg, and so forth. Israel Amter. So essentially, you've got this huge sacred cow in the room when you're dealing with communism in the United States, is that it's just ridiculously Jewish to a degree that nobody even debates it in academic circles, because we all know that you can't say it wasn't, because most of the representatives were, and the debate is not so much was it. It was why was it? So everyone argues, was it due to them feeling excluded, oppressed, you name it. It's been advanced as a thesis for why we should excuse Jews for trying to murder people, pretty much, in the name of Marxism and its concomitant ideologies. The only thing I would add to that in terms of the CPUSA is that the CPUSA was one of the best examples of what we call the Munzenberg, named after William Munzenberg, innocence committees, where you had all these people like Einstein and so forth, Thomas Mann, etc., coming forward and helping communists by what we call a popular front. So people said, okay, well, let's fight against fascism, let's fight against racism, let's fight against, let's fight for Negro rights, or let's fight for gay rights, or you name it. And they would have someone in, they would have someone who was trusted, what you call a communist introducer, someone who would go to these people that they trusted and say, you know, do you want to join this, because it's against this, or it's for that, and it's a good progressive cause, as they say. And essentially, you've got all these people from 1933 to 1939 in particular, who were supporting the Communist Party, didn't seem to care that they were, and well, they were told, and many of them were, unsurprisingly, again, Jewish, like you get in what they call the Red Hollywood years, where you have a lot of Jews in Hollywood getting involved in communism. The classic example, of course, being Ronald Reagan, who wasn't Jewish, but nevertheless was part of the trend, and he later became this great, supposedly great anti-communist, like so many of them. I mean, it's probably worth, again, a little fact that no, and for very people unaware of, is that the man who investigated everyone for Joseph McCarthy in the House Commission on Un-American Activities was Jewish, and he was a former communist and he was the business manager of the Daily Worker, of all things.
Oh, I had no idea.
No, it's a small thing that you I picked up when I was reading the testimony of the transcripts of the House investigations, which I would add, although they're really quite heavy going at times, with all the testimony and things that wouldn't make sense to a modern reader, because they're not all the organisations and acronyms are very different now. You get an awful lot of information about Jews. For example, you get there's a quote in there about a Jew in Jews in Croatia, where they were prosecuting Ustasha, and it turns out a lot of the judges who were killing Croatian patriots were Jewish, because it had been written quite happily in a book published by the University of Denver Press in 1957, but that he done some research, and oh look, they're all Jewish.
Now, if McCarthy was Jewish, why did he go Jews?
McCarthy wasn't Jewish, but he had his chief researcher in the House committee that told him who was a communist was Jewish.
Oh, okay. What was his name?
I think it might have been Benjamin Gitlow. I can't remember exactly his name. It was either Jacob Mindell or Benjamin Gitlow, I think. And they were both former, very senior figures in the CP USA. I think he was Russian as well in origin. Again, it's just a case of when you look at something, everything is not what it appears when you look at communist history, particularly internationally, where you find Jews popping up like, I don't know, daisies pretty much everywhere. Such a degree as when I quoted the Eric Harbour earlier in the program, I was making the point very sort of almost circumspectly that though people want to argue this kind of theory, the best place to go is an academic book, because you will find an absolute plethora of Jews popping their heads up. It won't be so obvious, but nevertheless, you will have a good source where to argue. The other thing I would probably like to discuss in regards to the CPUSA is the fact that there was a massive Communist Party of the USA involvement in espionage against the United States of America and its government. A great example is Philip Spiv, unfortunate name, who was Jewish again, who was a great left-wing journalist in the 1930s, who worked extensively with the Communist Party underground to attack the FBI by making it look like a fool, and to attack also the silver shirts of William Dudley Pelley and so on and so forth. And he often denied his Communist Party connections. But again, once the Soviet Union fell, Western researchers were able to go into the Communist Party archives and actually dig up all the documents and telegrams. And what they found shocked them, because they found all of a sudden that there was really a massive communist conspiracy against the United States of America. And yes, it was real, and it was bigger in some respects than a lot of people thought it was.
Now, didn't FDR kind of move this along?
Yes, he did. He essentially he allowed it. The classic example is Harry Dexter White, who is credited by most scholars now with the creation of the Morgenthau Plan, the plan basically to kill Germany, to kill all Germans sterilize them, salt the land, do whatever it was necessary to create a situation where, in communist theory, you would have a rising of the masses, which would inevitably be a socialist revolution, and that the Communist Party could then come in and take over. Perhaps another key point that's often unstated is that Stalin never abandoned world revolution.
Oh.
Never, ever.
Okay. There's a common theory that he concentrated so much on Russia that he just kind of gave up the internationalist agenda.
Yes, that's a common theory, But as Michael Hoffman, was it Michael Hoffman? Yes, it might have been. Who not the author is a he's a German academic. Wrote, sorry, not Michael Hoffman II. He wrote very pointedly that Stalin never ever gave this up, but socialism in one country was differed with Trotsky in that Trotsky was a fanatic. He wanted to see the Red Army roll over Europe, and his theory was that as they were rolling over Europe, all the masses would spring up and they would help the Red Army. The Red Army would create a domino effect and literally wipe everyone out and take over the world pretty much as a great socialist republic. That was revolutionary.
Righty. We do have to cut to a 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Stay tuned.
Are you still paying your credit cards and so-called bank loans thinking that you owe the money? Do you feel like it's your moral obligation but can't see an end in sight? Well, what if I told you that in truth, you don't owe a single penny? And that the banks know this and hope you don't find out. Here's where we come in. Free2Prosper.com specializes in a profound debt repudiation method which challenges the validity of your so-called debts, morally frees you from the burdens, and protects your property. Our system is often superior to settlement, bankruptcy, or consolidation, which often leave you in a worse situation. If you feel the moral obligation to take care of yourself and your family, then I urge you to consider taking action right now. The economy will not wait. If you want to know more so you can prosper through the economic collapse, all while staying honorable and true to yourself, then call 877-417-8393. That's 877-417-8393. Or visit free2prosper.com right now.
Warning for all Gulf Coast disaster survivors. Be aware that dangerous gases are in the air you breathe. Benzene, hydrogen sulfide, methylene chloride, and Corexit 9500. Keep your body clean with micro plant powder. For all Gulf Coast residents and all who want to be healthy, hempusa.org brings you a new formulation of micro plant powder with lactobacillus acidophilus, rebuilding your immune system while detoxing the rest of your body, pulling out positive toxins, heavy metals, viruses, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Micro plant powder will help eliminate these dangerous chemicals from the body used in the Gulf cleanup. At hempusa.org, we want you to try our number one selling detox product, micro plant powder. Call and order at 1-908-691-2608. 1-908-691-2608. Or visit us at hempusa.org today.
Did you know that the water you're drinking may contain over 2,000 different contaminants? From hormone-disrupting and mind-altering chemicals like fluoride in pharmaceuticals to newly emerging contaminants like radiation and other hybrid chemicals that water treatment plants don't screen out of our drinking water. PureEffectFilters.com has a breakthrough filter solution to effectively reduce the widest range of such contaminants, including the radiation coming from the Fukushima disaster. In addition, the filters will also revitalize your water by releasing natural minerals and electrolytes while increasing pH and antioxidant levels. Safeguard and revitalize your drinking water today with a breakthrough Pure Effect water filter system. Visit PureEffectFilters.com to learn more or contact us today at 1-888-891-4821. That's 1-888-891-4821. Call now and take one of the most important steps you'll take to a healthier future.
Welcome back, friends. Our guest today is Carl Rattle. All right, you were talking about Trotsky and his method of communizing Europe was just to roll over everyone. And yes, have the masses accept communism.
Yes, because you see, in communist theory, you have what we call the advanced proletariat. They were these are the urban workers. The idea is that as the law of surplus returns creates an underclass. This underclass will become increasingly disenfranchised. and the bourgeois and the petty bourgeois, as in the small shop owners, will be crushed, and they will eventually have nothing, as the famous phrase from the Communist Manifesto says, they will have nothing to lose but their chains, they will rise up, and they will accept socialism. Essentially, it is it's Hegelianism gone mad, would be the only way I think of describing it as as an ideology. I'm not going to go into the great things about around Hegel, because that's an area that even seasoned scholars have real problems with, because Hegel is so confusing, it's ridiculous.
Right.
but essentially, it works on the assumption of opposites. So you have one, so you have a situation, then you have a positive situation, you get the opposite of that situation, which then attacks or acts as a contradiction to that that present situation. And out of the conflict of those two opposites, you get a synthesis, you get thesis plus antithesis equals synthesis. A synthesis, which then is negated again, and so on and so on and so forth. That is the essential point that we need to understand in order to understand Marxism. But Trotsky thought, okay, let's just roll over everyone. It's going to be easy. The Reichswehr in Germany wouldn't be able to hold him, was the idea, and so on and so forth. They would rise up. They would see that they were soldiers. And so, to quote Chris Harman, who's a Marxist author who died fairly recently, the soldiers would see themselves as armed workers with their revolutionary brothers, and they would go forward from there, was the idea. In reality, of course, things are very, very different. The Soviet Union tried Trotsky's method in the 1920s when they attacked Poland, and Poland fought them to a standstill and beat them in that period. They also tried again to attack, they attacked Japan, over Manchuria, they attacked Finland, famously. And they repeatedly, over this time period, both Trotsky and Stalin advocated this revolutionary expansion. The key difference between the two was that Stalin was a pragmatist and Trotsky was an idealist. Trotsky lived in his ideals. You can see that if anyone wants to read anything about him, they'll find there's an awful lot of biographies out there by his disciples, like Ernst Mandel, who was Jewish, and so forth. You'll find that they trying to picture him as this kind of hero prophet. I mean, literally, he's often called the prophet by his followers. He then, yep. Of course, he was Jewish, would then, his idea was that the world would conform to theory. Stalin, who was a gangster, a love rat, among many other things that he was, but he wasn't actually Jewish, in spite of the claims made about him being so, as far as we can tell. He saw things more pragmatically, because he was Lenin's strong man. He was the man who robbed banks, funded the party, hid Lenin, and so forth. He said, okay, well, in order to take on these Western countries, we need to build up socialism in our own country, both to provide the propaganda of communism and so forth, and work from there.
All righty. We do have to go to our 1 hour, our 1 minute top of the hour break. And we'll be back in one minute with our guest, Carl Rattle. Sorry, I guess I'm rattled. Stay tuned.